Hello, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, August 12, 2006. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. I'm with EIR News Service Economics staff. And I will be glad to host today on the very important topic and discussion about the world historic events and processes in Mexico. This is igniting the situation politically, not only in North America, but, as I said, around the world. And I want to welcome our guests, then give a few brief updates on the some fast-breaking events around the globe, and then get right into the situation in Mexico. Because I'm so glad to welcome, direct from Mexico City by telephone hookup in Mexico City, Ingrid Torres. Welcome.
Hello to everyone.
And Ingrid is a leader of the LaRouche Youth Movement there and internationally, and has had quite an impact in Washington, D.C., California, and I don't even know where else. But she will be, for this hour, giving us the latest developments and key background on what's happening in Mexico. And here in our studio, I'm glad to have Gretchen Small. Welcome, Gretchen.
Hi, Marcia.
Who's been with our EIR News Service Ibero-American desk for many years, right, Gretchen?
Right.
And so we will talk directly, we'll hear directly from Ingrid, and we welcome your emails throughout the hour, and we also welcome them during the week. We can get to things. We have many questions that came in advance. What I want to do is turn first, though, to what we often call the marching orders and the breaking developments around the world, and then go to Mexico City. And what I want to emphasize is let's call it the backdrop to these dramatic developments in Mexico, namely the condition of the worldwide financial economics situation is that it's cracking up. It's not sometime in the future. We are in the breaking point. Mr. Lyndon LaRouche, many of you know, said some months ago that in his evaluation, the dynamic is that by September, maybe a little later, you're going to see a major upheaval in the disintegration of the financial system around the world. Well, I mentioned a couple things about this just in the last few days. You have, here it is, August, over half the year has passed, and now in the statistics of the famous U.S. housing bubble of home mortgages and so forth, the biggest builder of these homes that are used to leverage a lot of financial speculation reported that in the second quarter this year, the new orders for these houses dropped by 47% from a year earlier. This typifies the situation. It is going down fast. Take stock markets around the world. In the German stock market this week, there were wild gyrations, some certain stocks losing 10 to 30% in one day of their stock valuations. And considering that this is all leverage, what we're describing is, in effect, chain reactions of insolvencies, kind of mini crashes taking place. And the biggest, give you an example, the biggest kind of investment house in speculation on high risk opportunities. That's the jargon for these kinds of things, like junk bonds, you know, to get in and out of junk bonds. An outfit called, it's known as PIMCO, it stands for Pacific Investment Management Company. It's actually the world's biggest bond fund, along with Lehman Brothers Asset Management. They're very big too. They're just getting out of junk bonds. They want to go into U.S. treasuries. They are leaving. They are fleeing junk bonds. These are just a few indicative things of the process of what I said, of inner contingencies, of money trying to leave here, trying to go there. There's nowhere to go if you want to make high risk, crazy speculation. Derivatives are in trouble of various kinds. But behind the scenes, let's put it this way. There are syndicates of the old gray financial houses, literally, that connect back into what was called the Syndicate International by intelligence people in the 20th century. But anyway, these outfits are circling the globe, buying out natural resources, you know, metals, copper, this kind of thing, buying out government assets that aren't already sold off, looking for toll roads, buying whole utilities, this kind of thing. And so this isn't hypothetical. This is what's happening. Now, then we get to what the implications of this is. Elements in this kind of political, in these kinds of political circles are the ones that have been pulling the strings, calling the shots for the kind of thing you see developing in the terrible warfare by Israel on Lebanon and the continuation of Iraq. In other words, these financial elements are fomenting wars. That's what you see in the U.S. government in the person of Dick Cheney. He's an operative for them. And you have continuing threats on Iran and Syria. And also you had that little attention diversion thing where it's called the so-called London terror plot exposed this week. It doesn't mean that you might not have elements truly conniving in order to bring off some actual terrorist act. But the publicizing it, conducting of this revelation of the London terrorist plot in a way that it was done, you can see it's a diversion from the fact that we have a world financial breakup disaster on our hand. And what's going to come out of this? Is it going to be a revolutionary Republican period, or are we going to look at revolutionary imperial takeovers? That's obviously what's involved in Mexico, which we'll get to in a minute. But I do want to stress two things. I mentioned marching orders, and so I have two more things to say before we turn right to Mexico City. One thing is, who's behind what you have to see is the process of World War III, which I just described. We do have a statement by Mr. LaRouche that his Political Action Committee, LPAC, LaRouche Political Action Committee, has released. And it was printed in 250,000 copies in the United States, mostly concentrated on New York City and Washington, D.C. And it's available to everyone, and I highly recommend, it's been translated in different languages, that people make a point of continuing to intensely circulate that during this hot August, anywhere that you may be listening to us in the world right now. And in the United States, I certainly encourage you to contribute the resources to do this kind of thing. That's the only limit now, I think, in being able to tilt the world in a good direction and away from these evil schemes. And the second thing in that regard I'll point out is that in less than a month, Mr. LaRouche will give an international interactive webcast. His intention is to do it from Germany, do it in Berlin, as a dialogue with people from around the world, from Mexico, from the Americas, from China, from Russia, from Europe, from Africa, on the prospect for the next 50 years. I think he said around September 7th or 8th is the date this will be arranged. And the name of this international webcast will be U.S. Cooperation in Eurasian Development over the next 50 years. So we're going to look ahead as to what the future we are going to, what we're going to make of the future. And in that, with that vantage point in mind, let me just give you Mr. LaRouche's evaluation, I understand from his staff briefing, of something that happened over the last 12 hours, because many of you participating today will want to know what to make of this United Nations resolution that the Security Council unanimously voted up for a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon. And just a couple of points about that. I think it can be considered a kind of qualified triumph for certain elements in the wings, for President Bush's father, G.H.W. Bush, and for former President Clinton, for other people, and maybe for Condoleezza Rice, who's done a kind of hack job for the Bush family, not for the president. So that it's tricky, it has some lies in it, but there's an intention to have some kind of ceasefire situation. When I mentioned the lies in it, the whole warfare is blamed on the casus belli of Lebanon having captured two Israeli soldiers, and that's the reason for all of this. So that's not accurate. That is not truth. But sometimes truth is sacrificed not just for war, for the sake of peace. So there, you can look at it this way, and the thing is it may have some. You can dispute the morality of not representing it properly in terms of those individual matters in it, but it is an attempted intervention to try and keep things from going out of control. Because again, now the biggest problem is you have Bush's, the President Bush's state of mind, and you have Cheney and others in office who want to keep at it, want to keep having wars and terrorism as far as the general scheme. And that takes us back again to this matter of this so-called London terrorist plot. Again, it is true that you should have real security intelligence taking place, round up people who ought to be arrested, not terrorize the general public, not over-publicize and hype everything. So the best thing that could happen would be for Bush to be out of office and make sure Cheney resigned before that takes place. But we have to keep watch. There could be a major move by Mr. Netanyahu within Israel now. And even though the resolution itself that was passed by the United Nations may be an effort by some of the saner voices to prevail over the mass murdering types, the situation is still very unsettled. There are people who don't want to settle it at all. So I think it's important, as I said, keep getting out who is behind World War III. And now to turn to our topic of the hour, that on the significance of the revolutionary situation in Mexico City, what I'd like to do is go right to Ingrid Torres to start in any way, how you would like to, either historically or what happened this morning, Ingrid, I don't care.
Okay.
How you would like to begin the discussion, and we'll pitch in as we go along. Thank you.
Okay. Well, what I would like to comment on the first thing is that directly connected with what Marsha was saying on the international situation, that we have a problem with the bankers that want this system to collapse and to make the world go basically to hell, is that right now with the situation here with López Obrador and the movement he's creating and how we're intervening, is that people are really getting a sense that there is a historical change. And this is very important in their psychological way of thinking.
Did you say historical chance or historical change?
Change.
Change, okay.
Or a chance to change the history.
Yes, yeah.
But we have noticed that in giving briefings to the population where we're organizing on the camps, and different camps in the block, well, in the whole avenue, Reforma Avenue, where the whole camps are, is that people are pretty open to understand that this is not a Mexico's problem, just per se. That there are people, financiers, that are really managing the whole situation. So we don't have this type of breach that we had to cross before in organizing the population to tell them that we have an international synarchy, the same bankers that finance the Nazis and all the fascist movements in Europe in the 20s and the 30s, and that we also had that type of connections here in Mexico with the PAN party. That is something that the people are getting really easily. They really understand that. So they don't have any more, or it's easily to break this axiom based on the thing that the problem were the governments or the problem were the United States. So that is easily like breaked up in a conversation, in a dialogue with the population.
Oh, that's great. And to summarize for people and ask a question here at the same time, in other words, just for everyone listening, they know that the election July 2nd, you had some 40 million people vote, right?
Yeah.
And you had mass patterns of tampering with the actual physical vote and with everything else since. So that's the big fight. And you've had these mass rallies with literally, on one occasion, what, it was over 1.5 million in Mexico City. But these encampments you described, and I want everyone to know, you've been, your encampment, right, is at the base of the statue of the famous Benito Juarez, is that right?
Yes, and it's something that we have been deployed there like since 2 years ago. So even old contacts know that we are there. But it's very significantly our intervention with Amelius Boyton Robinson's declaration in favor of this movement, this specific movement. Because López Obrador has also mentioned Martin Luther King and Gandhi as one of the leaders that we should follow along with Benito Juarez to fight right now in Mexico in this historical moment.
Yeah, Ingrid, let me tell you, I think yesterday a letter appeared from López Obrador in the United States in the New York Times saying just that, if I'll quote from just what you just said.
Okay.
He said, "Grievances have now accumulated in the national consciousness, and this time we're not walking away from the problem. Enough is enough. In the spirit of Gandhi and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we seek to make our voices heard, and we need the goodwill and support of those in the international community." So that was just yesterday in the New York Times.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And so what we're doing is giving Amelius Boyton Robinson's declaration, which she wrote, or I think, the 8th of August. And she was one of the leaders in Martin Luther King's movement. And we're reading it in every single camp where we get a chance to do it. And we also are singing. We're singing Negro spirituals in Spanish, in translations that we have made for the situation right now. And people would get really, really excited by that. They really get an inspiration from the spirituals. Because, they're realizing that they're getting a type of comprehension of being this, a continuation of those type of specific movements. And doing this for the next generations, as also Obrador said in other of his speeches. So I think that's the type of spirit we're having is one that is people are really happy in the camps. They're trying to be productive in a sense, and we're trying to give a lot of classes on the different camps on economics, Lean's economics, on Benito Juarez and Lean's document Operation Juarez that he wrote when he was collaborating with our president, López Portillo. So the biggest fight we're having right now is conveying the idea to the population of who was López Portillo in Mexico, that we didn't have just Juarez as a nationalist that was fighting, and then we had Cárdenas that collaborated with Roosevelt, but we also had Benito Juarez collaborating with Lyndon LaRouche to fight for a new financial system.
Right, López Portillo. And people should know, he was president, 1976 to 82, right?
Exactly.
And 82 was when, just as you said, he personally met with Mr. LaRouche and Mr. Benito Juarez met, correct?
No, Mr. López Portillo.
López Portillo, sorry. Yeah.
The simultaneity of attorney.
Yes, that's right. That's a thought, isn't it? Right, yes. And so you are bringing out the nature of what Mr. López Portillo wanted to do, you were saying, Ingrid.
Exactly. Yes, that we need a new financial system. Because one of the things that has been emphasized in not just López Obrador, but other leaders, is that the problem, the real problem are the bankers and the financiers. And this is something said by some congressmen that are of the same party as López Obrador, the PRD. So what we're trying to introduce is that we need a national system based on sovereign nations that can create credit, and this is what also Lin said in his declaration in favor of López Obrador, that we need to get rid of the type of Dracula credit that is getting all nations in bankruptcy, and this is something that we're emphasizing more because yesterday, Fox, our current president, he created more credit. He changed our foreign debt to create more internal debt. So he sell off some assets. It was 13.5 million of pesos that he sell in Mexico.
Yeah, I think that's billion private. When we, yeah, right. He sold this off, piling on more debt onto the general public.
Mm-hmm. To pay external debt.
Mm-hmm.
So he sold domestic bonds in order to pay foreign bonds and then claims that there is that the debt is less when it just grew.
Exactly, exactly. So yesterday we gave López Obrador, well, we showed López Obrador a big poster that said, create a debt moratory and go for a new, for LaRouche's new Bretton Woods system. And so López Obrador, at the end of his speech, he saw that and he just made a sign saying that he had read it and he read it. So that's really important.
That's great. Yeah, this is a classic thing, as you say, President Fox doing this, just dumping more debt on the population of Mexico on behalf of this rotten international system that's breaking apart anyway. And Ingrid, is this expressed in some of the particular acts of civil disobedience? You've discussed encampments, that there are different camps in different parts, different states of Mexico. And in addition, there are individual actions, like one in front of major banks that were foreign-owned. Is that right? And other things. Does that manifest what you say?
Yes, yeah, some of the important things is strategically that is being made by some leaders in the Purity Party, where we are participating along, is that they're going to specific institutions that supported the PAN candidate, Calderón, like the bank, Bancomer.
Right.
That is one of these big banks that own our big debt called the Fobaproa, which the government is paying to the banks, to the private banks.
Right.
So it was that it was made that type of blockage.
Oh yes, a blockade.
Okay, yeah, basically you were telling us earlier, Ingrid. You have 3,000 people yesterday surrounded the Treasury building,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, 3,000.
And the first thing they hit was the toll roads. That you should describe, and then they went to the banks and blocked the banks. You couldn't get in. You couldn't get out.
Yeah, that was fantastic because people were trying to understand why this was important. So, you know, they have a type of list of all the transnationals and the bankers and that who have participated with all this type of fraud in Mexico, but also with the big fraud in the economic part with the Fobaproa and the globalization. So, yes, we were there and we were singing and we were organizing people and organizing the deputies and congressmen that are attending to those marches to try to convey them a strategic overview, which Lynn has said in the war in Middle East and then also the collapse of the financial system by September or the end of this year. So we had that one, and we also it was another blockage in front of the the Treasury.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Department of the Treasury or the
right.
equivalent.
Yeah, exactly, the Mexican Department of the Treasury. That was yesterday, and we sang the Negro Spirituals, and we read Amelia's declaration in favor of the movement here in Mexico, and a lot of people knew us since our mobilizations before, so they were very glad that the LaRouche Youth Movement was there, and they were asking us to go and sing in other of the doors of the Treasury that were also blocked, and they were saying, "Could you go and sing over there, please?" And then we went there and we gave a briefing, and some people knew us there from the type of actions that we did against Castañeda and against Calderón, which are of the right wing here in Mexico, and people are really know us. They're really getting to know the LaRouche movement in the camps by these type of facts, and I will say, principally or by the singing, which has been a big part of our mobilization.
I understand that in one of the large rallies, perhaps it was August 6th on Sunday, that because you were right up front and because singing is so beautiful and effective, that that ended up being the opening of the entire rally. Is that right?
Yes, that was pretty funny, because we were actually, at first, we were actually at the last part of the rally, but we jumped some security measures, and we went up to the front part, and people were, you know, saying the same type of complainings. You know, we want the vote for vote and things like that, and they were all saying it at the same time. So we start singing. We start singing the "We Shall Overcome" Negro spiritual in the version in Spanish. And so people around us suddenly shut up, and they start hearing what we were saying, and then they start shouting to the person that had the microphone, they should give us a microphone, because what we were singing was very important. So finally, after like 3 or 5 minutes, that the person in front of the microphone didn't want us to give the microphone, they, you know, continued talking, the people started just shouting, "You have to hear them, you have to hear them." So they gave us the microphone, and López Obrador was in front of us. So we sang the "We Shall Overcome." And at the end, we said, well, this is from the LaRouche Youth Movement dedicated to López Obrador and the movement here.
And was people smiling. The video shows him, Ingrid, that he was smiling. It's because he had to wait till they finished singing before he could begin his speech.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think to continue some sense of it, too, and to tie into the economics you described, the issue of the bankers having taken over Mexico, making clear who the enemy is, these figures that you mentioned. I understand, too, on this matter of roads, the toll roads leading into Mexico City that I think were private franchises in recent years, that also took place where they were stopped for many hours. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, people were actually letting the cars and some buses to just pass without paying. And the Coparmex, and the, which is an organism of a bunch of private entrepreneurs, well, basically owners of transnationals here in Mexico, they were so mad at this type of action that the next day they were presenting legal charges against the movement. And so it was funny, because in one of the 7 p.m. rallies that are taken every single day where Obrador is speaking, one of the other leaders, which is a senator right now, Jesus Ortega, he said, okay, so they present legal charges against us, we're going to go to the PGR, which is our, I don't know what...
The Attorney General's office.
Okay, yeah, the Attorney General's office. So he said, we're going to go there to present ourselves as delinquents for democracy.
Delinquents for democracy.
Delinquents for democracy, yes. That's what he said. So we're going to go with our hands tied up, you know, because we're guilty for that, and et cetera. So hundreds and hundreds, I think it was more than 1,000 people that we went there in front of this office to just give ourselves to the policemen, and nobody show up. but the people got really mad at these type of actions, you know, because they're sensing that they don't have a control, as they thought before the fraud. They thought that they just could go and do the fraud and people would say nothing, you know, that everyone would accept it. They're seeing that there's a big resistance and that they're taking some civil measures, specific measures, as Obrador has said, you know, that we shouldn't provoke anyone. And that gives a sense that he has a strategic view of what the situation is. Because if we would have reacted, you know, like Chavez or other presidents with violence, this would have been a disaster. But being a Pacific movement is very important for a strategic sense of not getting Mexico into a civil war. But that was a very exciting action. And
I understand that the on the highway for simply 20 minutes between San Diego, California, and Tijuana was also closed in the last 24 hours. Mind you, many highways are closed for hours from congestion. This was 20 minutes for the reason of democracy.
Yeah.
One thing that our listeners may look forward to, we're probably going to pull out a story. We were discussing this earlier. Write an article for the next week's magazine, pulling out again just how much of a robbery the privatization of the banks in Mexico and the privatization of those toll roads were, because the bank bailout that the government did after the banks all went bankrupt in 95. The government sold them off to the private bankers, and then they ran them into the ground, and then the government bought up the bad debt, mm-hmm. and gave the private banks bonds which carry interest. So the banks are making most of their money from these bonds they get from the government in return for bad debt that was non-performing. Nobody could ever use it. It's over $100 billion worth. And the highways is a little bit less money, but it's the same thing. And it's an example of the kind of looting that's being pushed by these synarchists all over the world. So it makes the fact that you guys down there went and got the toll roads and let people ride through for free. There's a lot of sympathy for that up here.
Yes, if you want to say more about it, I think that anyone should know the degree, as Gretchen said, of privatization, which was breathtaking. The banking sector itself, with this swindle of giving certain private transnational interests the right to have the government just of Mexico keep paying them, and also food processing, highways, the natural gas distribution, airports, and many other things. That this what is called into question now is that this is not right. It was not right in the last 20 years. It's been done in the extreme. And so internationally, where there are local fights about it, here it's on the national agenda of Mexico to say the entire thing is all this privatization or commercialization or other fancy names for it was totally wrong in the first place and against sovereignty. So, but on the economic scale of this, do you want to say anything more, Ingrid, about, you've mentioned toll roads, banks, I threw in food processing, gas
well,
distribution.
There was also mention by Obrador against free trade, against the NAFTA treaty.
Uh-huh.
That was, I think, 2 days ago, where he said, you know, we are in an economic collapse. We have these bankers that are getting older money from the population that is getting driven to poverty and hunger. And he said, and what is going to happen when in the NAFTA treaty we are going to have our free trade agreement is going to allow corn and frijol, the frijol in Mexico.
The beans, corn
the beans,
and beans.
Exactly, uh-huh. Corn and beans to get from the United States and other nations into Mexico. You know, what is going to happen to agriculture and to our industry when that happens, and that is also being destroyed by the NAFTA treaty and the whole globalization policy, where people in the agriculture sector are just dying out. They don't have a way to sell off their products, but just to Walmart, and Walmart pays them like almost nothing. They pay them like cents for what they're producing. So that was also another important thing, that this type of mobilization is also rising up to make people understand that the problem is not a problem from parties. It's not a problem just in Mexico. It's a problem of the whole international financial system. And so right now in the campments, they're going to organize, and this is also things that we have been doing, but this is going to be done formally, a type of university. That's the way they call it, a university in the campments where they're going to be talking about neoliberalism, what does that mean, what is globalization. And so that was announced just yesterday. And we're going to intervene there also to explain what real physical economy is, that economy is basically not money. And that people should start understanding that, to understand the idea of why do we need national credit to really be sovereign from these interests, from these banking interests internationally. So I will say that was also a very important declaration and part of the process of rising up the discussion in the cabinets that is not the fight for the vote for vote and to count it, count vote for vote, but it's a type of fight of making people think. And this was also said by one of the leaders yesterday. She said, we can win the vote for vote fight, but if we don't make people think, we're going to lose at the end.
And Ingrid, are you saying that the Lopez Obrador or others with him announced this type of university effort, you know, to expose what is globalization and neoliberalism, or your LIM announced it, or both?
Both. I mean, we have been giving, we have that movement, the Rushdie movement, we have scheduled for economic classes, but this was also formally announced by people from Obrador.
I guess they like the idea of a university on wheels, right?
Yeah.
Actually, one thing you were on this question, the vote for vote, not everybody in the United States may know. The central demand of the Lopez Obrador camp is, since they know this, they were completely robbed, something like what happened in 2000 and 2004 in the United States, but nobody ever did anything. But they were robbed, and they have proof they were robbed. And what they're simply demanding, which is institutionally really precise in the way that Ingrid said of avoiding, of getting justice but avoiding civil war, is that there be a vote-by-vote, polling station by polling station recount of the election, because the opponent Calderon, who's the synarchist, won by only 243,000 votes. So any shift in any little shift in all of the polling stations would make clear that Lopez Obrador won. One of the most beautiful things, I think, that Lopez Obrador recently said in these nightly 7 p.m. rallies is he made the point that behind every vote is a citizen. Behind every vote is a human being who is hopeful or wishes for justice to reign in Mexico. And that's a quote that's the way he sees it. That's the way he viewed it. Which, when I mentioned that to Amelia Boynton Robinson, precisely that's what the civil rights movement was here for. That's what the vote represents.
Yes.
Thank you. And on the status of that, Ingrid, Gretchen, sketch it in some, but in particular, because not everyone listening today from different parts of the world, and certainly not in the United States or Canada, knows. But in other words, the election authority announced on August 5th, I guess it was, just a tiny, totally inadequate, ultra-restricted kind of action that they would do, as opposed to properly vote by vote and poll by. Is that what's currently happening?
Yes, they accepted the tribunal here, the electoral tribunal, accepted to count just 9% of
okay.
all the polling, all the votes. And even in this small percentage, that is not enough. I mean, it's not what is enough to see the whole change in the election. But even in this, it's enough to see that the whole irregularity, the whole errors that were made and the fraud that was made. This is something that is very important because Obrador yesterday said we should not get focused on the numbers. The numbers are not important. We know that we can, if we can demonstrate that in each single polling station there were two votes that they robbed us, we can win the election. And there have been polling stations where the difference is from 80 votes to 100 votes that they robbed from Obrador, and there are also some extra votes that appeared in favor of Calderon. And this is the whole tendency in all the polling stations. Votes that appear that are extra votes for Calderon, and other votes that don't appear that were for López Obrador.
Right. So it's all these patterns are very, very clear.
Exactly. But Obrador said, let's get not focused on the numbers. This is not important. What we should see is the whole process of it and the intention behind it. That is an intention of that is the fraud. This is what's really important. Because then a lot of people, you know, get into these discussions about the numbers and how many and how many are missing and how many are, you know, extras and et cetera. But the most important thing is that this whole election was illegitimate. And this is what is being emphasized. So right now what they're demanding is not only the vote for vote count, but also to not accept all these polling stations that show these errors, that show this type of mistakes.
I think what they are talking about is in the this is actually pretty funny, Ingrid. In the polling stations where I think someone was telling me there might be 70,000 ballots that are missing. In other words, the ballots were sent to the polling stations, certain number of them, and now they can't account for them. And some of the election officials who were obviously involved in the fraud said, oh, it's just that people don't understand how to vote, so they took their ballot home with them.
Oh, they were also saying that people wanted as a memory from the election.
Right, right. A memento, a souvenir.
60,000 people took their ballot just as a memory from the election.
Right. Right. So, but the thing is, those specific polling stations, I think they're discussing those polling stations, the entire vote there should be thrown out or annulled.
Exactly.
That's the word. Not annul the entire election.
Yeah, not the entire election, just those ones that are showing these irregularities, and the rest of the polling stations would actually, if you count them, will actually give the victory to López Obrador.
Right, right.
They will. If you take those polling stations out, the polling stations that are left will show the López Obrador, even with all the rest of the type of
fraud and irregularities.
Yeah, even with the rest of the fraud of the Fox government supporting Calderon, even with all of that of the media manipulation against the population, saying that López Obrador was a danger for Mexico, even with all of these type of manipulation, López Obrador will win. So
right.
this is really interesting.
Right. Let me just go back to one thing, although that we still have in the final 19 minutes any time for the points you want to make. But among the questions that were around in advance, we have heard that, and you mentioned about López Portillo, the Mexican president in the period 1976 to 1982. He met with Mr. LaRouche. They conferred. He had plans. He did courageous things internationally. But he has been smeared. He has received the treatment in the United States that FDR got by some enemies, some of these, the cultural mind control media operations of the Sinarchists internationally have all kinds of stock slanders they come out with. And you were saying that you're organizing among the Mexican population to understand who López Portillo really was. Is that the case?
Yes, and I think it's pretty, in a sense, it's pretty understandable also because people are leaving the type of manipulation the media did against López Portillo with López Obrador right now.
I see.
So we're using that as an example of how the media has always made a fool out of them, you know, that it's not a thing about, you know, the specific person, but it's just that, it's a thing about these personalities, like Portillo or Obrador, which are seen as a menace to these international interests that want to go back to feudalism, that want to create an empire and disappear nation states, and that this is the same type of treatment that has been applied to LaRouche internationally. So I think in that sense, because all these actions that the population used to have, you know, the television was all about truth, you know, that television was a real educational institution. And these actions are breaking apart, you know, because now they're seeing that it's not true, that you know, they're saying the most stupid things in the media. And so they're starting to realize and to be more open about LaRouche's ideas, about Portillo's ideas, and in general, about what the situation in reality is, that the financial system is really going to collapse, even though the media is saying the opposite.
Right. I think we can understand that. And with what's done to figures, like to Mr. LaRouche and so forth. Well, one thing is the many have wanted to know about this teaching process. You mentioned this very exciting thing about near future plans in exposing globalization, but you've been involved in impromptu classes, in music, or in, I understand, certain encampments asking for some music. Could you describe this in Mexico City? What is the scene like?
Well, we have been giving classes on the synarchy. What the synarchy means internationally as a movement that was created by the bankers to establish fascist governments. And we have been giving classes on the science of physical economy, on some of the So You Wish to Learn All About Economy, that is a book written by LaRouche. And we're going to be starting a new document which is called Operation Juarez, the LaRouche Road with López in time of López Portillo, when he was collaborating with him, and how Mexico did apply a moratory debt in that moment with López Portillo in the 82, and how that was also being done by Juarez in his time. So we're using these three things and the music to not just educate the people on what they should know about economy, but also try to give them a moral inspiration to fight. And that's why the chanting is so important in the LaRouche movement, I will say internationally, because this is what people can more directly visualize why there are human beings that can change history, why they are not animals, why we are a beautiful creation. And spiritually and morally, this is very uplifting for everyone. Because, you know, even though the intention of educating people in the encampments is good, in general what you have is, you know, popular music and rock and reggae and, I don't know, all types of music. And people want to express themselves, but they are just trying to defend Obrador and try to express their emotions, but what we're trying to do is giving all these people in the cabins the type of tools they need to give a fight after the whole vote for vote fight is over.
Right.
So we're trying to educate them as people that can educate others in general.
Ingrid, one thing that I think would probably amaze a lot of Americans is, as I understand it, and maybe you can say more about this, we're actually reading parts of Plato's Republic and reading part of Friedrich Schiller's aesthetical letters there on the street in the middle of what is really a revolutionary situation, and people are listening, right?
Yes. Yes, we have not only Schiller and the Plato dialogues, but also Cervantes. We have a plan of finishing the Cervantes book, the two books that he wrote on Don Quixote.
When did you start?
that was started since the camp. I think since last week. Ever since the campment started. So right now we're in chapter number 14 or something. And yes, we were reading that. Yesterday we have a gal session. We have a science and geometry session at night in one of the campments. And we're planning to have another one on Sunday from the Fundamental Theorem of Algebra that Gauss wrote in 1799. Because, just to convey the population the concepts that they need to know as a method for thinking. And yes, I think this is amazing. I mean, I don't know if this is, like, done in any other moment in history in Mexico or in the world that people are reading, you know, Cervantes, Schiller, Gauss, and the Plato dialogues on the street.
No, I think it's revolutionary.
People are there. I said there were 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 at a time, right, and are interested. That's what a revolutionary period is.
Yeah. Yeah, that when people are willing to think, there is where you know that you have a historical moment.
Right, exactly. Actually, one of the things when I had a chance earlier last week to discuss with LaRouche, the you know, I was giving him a report that we'd gotten from you all down there. He was just emphasizing the fact that this proves what he's, it's like a demonstration in the field of the fact that the 80% of the population, when they have leadership, will respond, will turn out, act on the basis of a higher purpose, and that they're now a factor. What he described Mexico as, he said, this is a worldwide, we see in Mexico is just what we're going to see worldwide, as the 80% of the population again become a factor in creating real history.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And this is something that also somebody in front of the podium where Obrador spoke yesterday said, you know, that, and it's true, I mean, people were thirsty for justice since decades ago. People were ready to react to a type of mobilization like this one. And the only factor that was missing was a type of leadership that would seem honest to take that through, like to take that, to mobilize the population for that purpose. So even though what is amazing is that you have people that come from indigenous communities, that you can realize that, you know, most of these people don't know how to read, and all of these poor people, a lot of them didn't went to the university. But when you talk to them, they know that they have to act. They're saying, well, this is one of the this may be the last chance that we have to do something. And even though they may not be, you know, PhDs on anything, they want to be part of history. And you can see tears in their eyes when they're saying that they're really excited that they have a chance to be heard. Because one of the things that you can realize by what the media is saying and what other people are saying in that support Calderón and this right wing faction. Is that they don't really care about these 80% of the lowest income brackets, that they're really indifferent to the situation that globally is happening, where people are dying out from these economic policies, and not all of them, but you know, certain people just you want to measure the economy based on what they're living, and if they're having, you know, a good income, they think everything's right, you know. But yeah, people become really excited about being part of something, you know. So.
How many people are there on the street? Do you have any idea in the camps?
In the camps, I don't know exactly how many, because you know people are taking they come and they go to rest. And then other people come from these different states. So you have a rotating, number of people that are going there. But I do know that there is a camp for every single state of Mexico. We have 31 states here in Mexico, so there is a camp for each one of them. And there are other 16 camps that are from each county in the Mexico City and in the DF, I'm sorry, in the district.
In the federal district.
The federal district, yeah. So we have around more than 41 campments.
Oh, you know what, Ingrid, the other thing you might want to discuss is what you had mentioned earlier about the outreach emphasis of López Obrador.
Oh, yes, that's something very important. And this is something, I mean, LaRouche has been emphasizing this for our organization. We have to go for new people. We have to meet new people to organize them, and youth and everyone that can contribute to our movement. And that's the same thing Obrador said for this resistance, this specific resistance right now. Yesterday, all this week, he has announced that we should go for outreach and give people a letter that he wrote 2 days ago, where he's explaining all the actions that we're taking, that the resistance movement was forced to act this way because of the negation of the necessity of the population by the media and by the government and all these bankers that are behind this. So he wrote a letter, and he's inviting all the people that attend to the nightly 7 p.m. rally to go out to, you know, communities to pass out this letter, to pass out an invitation for the big rally tomorrow at 11 a.m. So tomorrow, Sunday, we're going to have, I don't know how many people in the last, in the third citizen assembly, in the third rally that it was, I don't know, 2 weeks ago or 1 week ago, there were like 2.5 million people, 2.5 million. So right now we're going to invite, and people are inviting in the metro stations. Our movement right now is in the metro stations, and some from people from the PRD are also there inviting for the rally tomorrow to inform the population of what is going on, why we're manifesting, and why we're fighting. That is, he also mentioned in this letter the economic policy of free trade. So, but this is the real reasons of what we're fighting. That is not, as the media is trying to say, that it's just because Obrador is stubborn and he's thirsty for power. But it's really because the population is thirsty for justice. So yes, this is being done by the for the rally tomorrow.
Right, and in fact, to underscore that, Ingrid, we have a translation here. It just summarizes some of the things, and you may want to develop more. He's saying, we don't want to have these enemy interests impose their will on our nation and the fate of the majority of Mexicans. Anyway, and he says, these types of people he's opposing want us to silently accept inequality, poverty, unemployment, out-migration, starvation, wages, unavailability of space for youth in public universities. They want us to accept taxes on food and medicines, privatization of Social Security, privatization of electricity, privatization of the oil industry, and to allow them to deal a blow to millions of our producers with the free import of corn and beans from abroad. And so I'm just saying, I'm giving people the specificity you just described.
Exactly.
I think that we could say that any American who really wants, is worried about or concerned about the immigration from Mexico, what they ought to do is back López Obrador's movement. Because in every single speech where he just addresses the economy, he says one of the most horrible things that the economic policy is, it is forcing people to leave Mexico simply to be able to live. That the migration is a result of the economic policy, which has destroyed NAFTA's, destroyed the United States and destroyed Mexico and created the mess.
And Ingrid, you know, these international financial statistics that keep track of flows of money shows, I think, that the remittances from the United States going into Mexico, Gretchen, you may have the number, are the highest ever.
It rose by 20% in the last year, from $20 billion a year to $24 billion of just Mexicans who've gone to the United States and make money working. You know, we know these guys. They work a lot of times seven days a week, 12 hours a day, to send people money back home to their families in Mexico so their families can eat in Mexico. And the bankers like the money because then they figure that, well, they don't have to, you know, then they don't have to get involved. Let the slaves work.
Yes. Yes, and people are realizing that it's an international problem. And so what we're doing here, what gets people really excited, is to have people from abroad, internationally, that are supporting the movement. And we're going to have two DVDs, as I was noticed this morning, one with LaRouche's declaration on this thing about immigration and what the Democratic Party should do in the United States. And this was said in a webcast that Lynn had 20th of July. So people should check it, and we're going to be passing in the camps this 6-minute DVD with what LaRouche said on the situation in Mexico, and also Amelius Boyton Robinson's declaration by voice, by telephone, and to make people aware that this is an international problem that can only be solved in the roots by a new financial system, that there is no local solutions, but that we need national patriotic governments to defend the population when the whole system is collapsed, that we don't want governments that are in the collapse of the financial system are willing to sell off the nation just to pay the bankers, but that we need patriotic governments like Kirchner in Argentina, like Obrador is showing here in Mexico, and what the Democratic Party should do in the United States with LaRouche to work for a new Bretton Woods system. And so this is something that I think it's also very important, that the international support for this movement that gets people really, really motivated to continue fighting.
Ingrid Torres, thank you so much, and I'm glad you had the last word on this hour, which is August 12th, 2006, the LaRouche Show. That was Ingrid Torres, direct from Mexico City, and we thank Gretchen Small also. And I stress to everyone, look for what Ingrid said about the July 20th Lyndon LaRouche internet or statement, which you can find on www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com, and also on larouchepub.com. And that is it for this week's show, The LaRouche Show. And I ask you to make sure to be here August 19th. We're weekly from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And this July 20th material from the LaRouche webcast is being prepared if the resources are available for mass circulation. And otherwise, you can find it on the websites. Thank you all. And Ingrid, our hearts and all our efforts are with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.